All right, let's cue up a little music, get ourselves in the right mood. That's better. Leonard Bernstein's West Side Story, the overture, the maestro himself at the stand. Now, after countless biographies, television specials, and performances of his work, what is there left to say about one of the greatest American composer-conductors of all time? Turns out, there's quite a lot left to say, and who better to say it than Bernstein himself? Or rather, the vast trove of unexplored correspondence Bernstein left behind after his death in 1990. Enter the writer and critic Nigel Simeone. A while back, he'd just finished writing a book about West Side Story.
And I was talking to my friend Mark Horowitz in the Library of Congress, and I said, Mark, what do you think I ought to do next? And he said, well, there's 15,000 letters that haven't really been looked at. So I thought, well, that's a very good reason not to do it, since there's 15,000 of them. And then I thought for about 60 seconds and thought, hey, this is just far too exciting a possibility to pass up.
Simeone sifted through decades of correspondence and compiled them into the new book, The Leonard Bernstein Letters. And through these letters, we hear a completely different, more intimate side of Leonard Bernstein as he reflects on his own life, struggles with his own work, and feels a profound, endless passion for great music.
You do, as you say, get this completely natural, unvarnished voice. So everything comes across with a kind of directness that's incredible. I was really amused, actually, to find letters to, for instance, one of his old roommates in Harvard, where in 1938 he said, I hate the Harvard Music Department. And you can print that. You can tell everybody about it. It's academic and high schoolish, and I hate it, and I want to go home. Now, that's not something I think we ever heard Bernstein say about his great alma mater once he left it.
No. Well, it's in exactly that that drew me to one of the earliest letters that you have published here in the book, written in 1933 by a then 15-year-old Leonard Bernstein, I believe, to his friend Sid Raymond. And I just have to read a little bit of it. So he says, Dear Sid, I bought Bolero!
What's so wonderful about that is that I can't do it in the book, but it's actually written with real theatre, because just before that he says, turn over the page and see what's coming next. And then on the page turn, in great big letters, he's put that. The excitement's fantastic, isn't it?
He goes on to say, he says, he has a piano version of it that he bought, and he says, of course it doesn't come up the way the orchestra plays it, but it's marvelous anyway. And the ending, speaking of cacophony, boom, crash, discord, sock, brrr, down the scale. Well, now that I've got that off my chest, I feel better.
It's brilliant, and that kind of effervescence is actually something that slightly amazingly, you get that kind of boyish delight in music really much later on as well. All the way through, it's just stuff that he is completely passionate about.
Well, speaking of musical friendships, there are a number of letters in the book between Bernstein and Aaron Copland, the great Aaron Copland, who became, you know, a close mentor and friend of his, particularly letter number 25. It's number 25 in the book, but it was written in or received by Aaron Copland in 1938 while Bernstein was still at Harvard.
Yeah. It's written on Elliott House stationery from Harvard. Dear Aaron, it's going to be hard to keep this from being a fan letter. The concert was gorgeous, even the Dvořák. I still don't sleep much from the pounding of, and then he quotes a bit of El Salón Mexico in my head.
Yeah, he in fact writes out the notes.
He writes out the dum bum bum. Yes, he does. In any event, it's a secure feeling of how we have a master in America. I mean that too. Don't poo-poo. I sat aghast at the solid sureness of that construction of yours. Timed to perfection. Not an extra beat, just long enough for its material. Orchestral handling, plus. Invention, superb. And yet, with all that technique, it was a perfect roller coaster ride. Copeland was the one person he really wanted to study with when he finished at Harvard. He did get a lot of advice from him, but it was never formally his student. But I think their correspondence is fantastic, actually. It runs all the way through the book. Copeland was very generous with his praise of Bernstein's conducting, much less so when talking about his music. It was by no means uncritical in either direction, even actually when Bernstein did Copeland's Third Symphony for the first time in Europe, in Prague. He says, you know, the only movement that I think really works is the slow movement, and there are bits you really ought to think about changing. Now, this was quite a bold thing to say to the person you most revered, but there was always that honesty between the two of them, and I think that's what made it so special.
We've had conversations on our program with other experts and biographers of Leonard Bernstein, and one of the things that frequently comes up is, for example, you know, the frustrations that Bernstein had, even though he was so wildly talented. You know, nevertheless, we had one guest who once told us that Bernstein wanted to be the American Mozart, but never quite felt that he reached that apotheosis of his career. So who did he share his frustrations with in his correspondence?
Well, certainly with very good friends like David Oppenheim, like Copeland sometimes. One thing that keeps coming through, it's very interesting, especially in the 50s, he keeps saying, I've got to stop all this conducting. It's making composition really difficult. And you know what happened, because, you know, at the end of that decade, he was principal conductor of the New York Philharmonic, and, you know, he was submerged in conducting work. But he kept saying, I'm going to have to stop this conducting. It's preventing me from devoting the time I need to compose. But he just didn't have the time to do everything. And, you know, there's something he said very perceptively about himself in 1938 to one of his friends at Harvard. He said, who do I think I am? Everybody?
The New York Philharmonic, under the musical direction of Leonard Bernstein, will give a complete performance of the Second Symphony by Gustav Mahler.
There are a couple of letters, given the particular time period we're approaching now, that really struck me. And one of them is actually, I believe, the transcript of a talk that he gave on the 25th of November, 1963. Of course, just 3 days after the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And he says, my dear friends, last night the New York Philharmonic and I performed Mahler's Second Symphony, The Resurrection, in tribute to the memory of our beloved late president.
And at the end of that speech, there's a beautiful passage where he says, we musicians, like everybody else, are numb with sorrow at this murder and with rage at the senselessness of the crime. But this sorrow and rage will not inflame us to seek retribution. Rather, it will inflame our art. Our music will never again be quite the same. This will be our reply to violence, to make music more intensely, more beautifully, more devotedly than ever before.
We get that same sense of depth of feeling, you know, what, 5 years later when another Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, is assassinated. And there's a really quite moving letter that Jackie Kennedy writes to Leonard Bernstein.
At 4 in the morning.
4 in the
fact.
Morning.
Yes.
The 9th of June, 1968, and it begins, dear Lenny, it's 4 in the morning after this long, long day. We stayed in Washington at my mother's house. And she goes on to write about the music that was played during Robert Kennedy's funeral. And she writes, when your Mahler again, started to fill, but that's the wrong word because it was more this sensitive trembling. the cathedral today, I thought it the most beautiful music I had ever heard. I'm so glad I didn't know it. It was this strange music of all the gods who were crying.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? It was the Adagietto of the Fifth Symphony, and it's almost a stream of consciousness, this letter. I mean, there are bits of it that just feel almost like random thoughts. But, you know, essentially she ends up by saying, you know, will you tell your noble orchestra drowning in heat and cables when I pass them that so many people all this day have said how beautiful you were, how many people cried, people who don't know music. You know, I think it's wonderful.
You know, one of the most remarkable things I found about this collection of Bernstein's letters is that, you know, you put them in chronological order. So we hear Bernstein in his own voice or in his own writings from the time he's 15 to near the end of his life. Now, for someone like you who knows Bernstein's career so well, what did you see in his writings, his correspondence at the end of his life that surprised you, that you wouldn't have expected when reading, you know, the 15-year-old Leonard Bernstein's letters?
You know, it's almost a slight melancholy, actually. The last decade, everything becomes a little shorter. There's still the wit, there's still the brilliant wordplay. He sent lots of little short poems to other musicians or friends. Some very funny letters to people like Stephen Sondheim and to his protégés, to people like Baron Alsop. Charming, short things. But what you don't get is the sort of long, great sort of flourishes of enthusiasm that came earlier on. So there is a kind of, there's a slightly sort of autumnal feeling to the to the letters of the last 10 years or so. Some of the exuberance has gone, I suppose, but it's been replaced by a sort of reflectiveness.
Nigel Simeone is the editor of the Leonard Bernstein Letters, 15,000 or so pieces of correspondence between Leonard Bernstein and luminaries in the world of music and beyond. I spoke with Simeone back in 2013. And let's go out today listening to Leonard Bernstein conducting Beethoven's Symphony No. 7 in his last concert ever with the Boston Symphony Orchestra at Tanglewood in 1990. Bernstein died just 2 months after this performance. Well, that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.